It's Thursday, September 19th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 312 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 34 minutes.
Hello and welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Pat.
I'm still Wayne.
My name's Chad.
And this is Julia.
One announcement before we start rolling with our topic. There is a gamer meetup on November 16th at the Holiday Inn in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. So if you guys are going to be in the area on the 16th, head on over to the Holiday Inn and find some good games. I will have a link to that in the show notes for more information.
So a few weeks ago, some of us all went to something locally. You weren't there, Pat.
I wasn't, because it was hot and I didn't want to drag the kids out.
The local botanical gardens does a Japanese festival every year, and they've done this for
a million years.
It's at least like 35
I believe
so.
They did it.
35
They started doing
years.
It before there were even cherry blossoms.
Before there were even Japanese people, they were doing
yes.
the Japanese
wow.
festival.
The foreshadowing was amazing.
I know. It's just great.
They were very forward-thinking
people. They have
people.
A big geodesic dome that kind of looks like a spaceship. It's
yes.
like this sort of generation ship.
I'm not growing. Saying it was Japanese people, but it
but
was,
it was
Japanese,
Japanese
people.
Huh.
You were saying, Wayne?
Let's bring this back to Earth.
Huh.
So anyway, some of us went to the Japanese festival. We all went separately, but...
No, me and Chad hung out.
Yeah,
we did.
We hooked up and hung out, yeah.
Don't say hooked up.
No, wait, we did... Yeah, because your husband, your fiancé was there.
Yeah.
Chad, don't give me those come to their eyes.
No, we met up at the Taiko Drums,
yes.
and... You know, I love the Japanese festival. I do.
We didn't hook up. Her mom was there. Come on. I met her mother.
Wow.
Oh, yeah,
it just keeps getting better and better, Wade.
And Mike's mom.
And Mike's mom.
First, it was a threesome. Now it's a quinsome.
Oh, and they had drums.
With parents involved. And drums. They were beating each other with the drumsticks.
Yeah, I thought I really enjoyed the Japanese festival, but apparently Chad has me beat.
It was like Woodstock and the Taiko drumming.
It was like it was the Woodstock Burning Man Japanese festival of St.
So
Louis.
So we were sitting in the perfect spot. It was like up on a hill under a tree because, you know, Botanical Gardens, there's quite a few trees there. And, you know, we were all kind of sitting down and we had this, the hill rolled down into this big amphitheater. We could see the stage. It was great. As soon as it started, everybody stood up and we had a view of
asses.
Like butts as far as the eye could see is all butt.
You know, I hate that because that happens like all the time. You'll go to a concert, you know, you'll be sitting in this nice, comfortable seats, and then the stuff starts, and then the people they stand up right in front of me. It's like, damn it, I paid however much money for these seats. I want to sit down and watch the concert. Sit the down.
Yeah, ooh, I just went to Heart and Led Zeppelin tribute band.
Uh-huh.
My boss had won tickets from K-Hits and he had given them to me. So I had like almost front row seats at Verizon. And every 50-year-old around me was standing the whole time. I'm like, how do you have this stamina?
I know.
I went to friggin' Offspring 311. And they're it irritates the piss out of me.
Anyway.
It was like a couple of years ago. It was a row seat. And there was one row of seats in front of us and then a walkway for people and then all the other rows of seats and stuff. This person sat down right in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like some 50-year-old broad there to enjoy the show like I was, sitting around, we're talking, hanging out, whatever. Didn't know this person. And she stands up. As soon as they hit the thing, they stand up for the opening act. I like was leaning to the right. I was leaning to the left.
It you know the just, problem there, Chad?
I even took a picture of her ass and posted it on Facebook and said, this is my view of the concert
nice.
Right now.
The problem,
no, it wasn't.
The
nice
problem was
all.
She didn't understand the culture of concerts.
Yeah.
That was the problem.
That's right.
Cultures.
I don't know.
Right.
I have no idea why you brought that up, Wayne. But so, yes, the topic that we actually want to talk about this week is cultural differences in your game. And that's if you're taking your characters to somewhere near on the planet, on the continent or the planet they're going to, they've never been there before. Obviously you're going to have cultural differences from what they're used to.
The key is to be as racist as you possibly can. Push the racial boundary so far to where your players accuse you of being a racist. That's how you add color and depth to the game.
Okay. Wow. Well, thank you guys for tuning in.
Obviously, we'll last episode. Bye.
Next week. Yeah, we won't talk to you next week. It's been fun.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things that go into trying to actually present a culture, and there's a lot of missteps. Yeah. One of them is
racism.
Yeah, one of it is
even accidental.
It comes off as accidental racism. Yeah. Another one, you always talk about Poke Cities in your game.
Yes. Poke Planets,
yeah. Poke Cities, where you go in and everything revolves around one thing. Yeah. No culture entirely revolves around just one thing.
So that term, it's something that Dan and I came up with years ago when we see this in a lot of D&D games or whatever way back when. So Pokemon, the children's game and cartoon and stuff, their entire planet, their entire world, because it's not an alternate Earth, it's this whole planet, right? The entire society, culture, history, everything revolve around Pokemon. Yep.
They have Pokemon movers, they have Pokemon construction people,
they have Pokemon street cleaners, they armies. Have Pokemon healers, doctors.
The entire economy revolves around the Pokemon parks, right, and Pokemon competitions.
Everything. Every aspect of life involves Pokemon and Pokemon this and that. So it is a Poke world. The entire theme of the whole planet is that it revolves around Pokemon. And so what you have is you have game, like science fiction games do this a lot. Think of it like Star Wars. Star Wars, they go to the ice planet of Hoth. And the whole planet's an ice planet. And the whole thing is ice. And it's all an ice planet. And it's there to be icy and have an ice monsters and stuff.
Yes. Why did you build that there?
Good question.
You go to Endor, the forest moon of Endor. The whole planet is a forest. Now,
you mean the moon?
Moon, sorry. There's going to be, well, like this, I say this, right? And there's going to be Star Wars wanks. The whole planet, they had an ocean and three lakes, and there was a city. And you had to read this extended version of book. And in 1983, there was a comic book that proved that it, and all this sort of stuff. But, you go to, what's the desert planet?
Tatooine.
Entire planet, all desert. Corsicon. The whole city, or the whole planet, is one city.
I think that was a rude gesture that you just spoke there, but anyway.
Corsicon.
Keep in mind that was George Lucas. He's not.
Well, I'm not saying that criticizing.
Don't get me started on George Lucas.
Yeah, anyway.
I'm not actually bashing Star Wars in this instance, but it just as an example, I know why he did it, even from a movie-making perspective. It had to do with color palette and story flow and thematics and stuff, and that's cool. But in a role-playing game, you're not really dealing with color palettes and that sort of thing. And so, I see this in a lot of sci-fi games. You go to the desert planet, you go to the ice planet, you go to the forest planet. Even like a D&D type game, it's just like, okay, I go to the desert culture, I go to the forest culture with all the elves.
There's a fishing town whose entire city revolves around fishing.
Fishing and the pub where you get the quest.
Yeah, and the tavern.
Which has a fish name to it.
Which is a fish name. It's the Salty Whore, and that's about it.
Wow. So. You went dark there.
Well, when you're on the ocean, it's going to take on sort of a salty air. I mean, it's just going to happen.
Yeah.
But as we wander around the Japanese festival, you have different sections of it where you're dealing with different things. Right. There's the food section. There's the entertainment where there's, like you mentioned, the taiko drums going on. There's a lot of clothing throughout. There's the Japanese garden where they do the opening ceremony. Mm-hmm. With that, you see parades. You get a little bit of the religions. You get ceremonies and things like that. That's something I haven't really seen much in games. Like, you may come into...
You mean culture?
Exactly. you may go into a town in a game, and they have a celebration or a festival going on.
We played a game, a D&D type game, and I wanted to have a
Fedtober
cultural event. And it's what is this? I didn't think of it. I just wanted there to be something other than people farming and being miserable about their lives. So they're having a festival. What's it called? Fedtober.
It's a great festival.
It is a great. We actually had a lot of fun with it. We made this whole Fedtober thing. It was like this drinking festival. It's great.
I think that what happens with cultures and games, though, is that the GM tends to focus so much on NPCs and just expect the NPCs to make the world or the area they're in or whatever it might be, that they don't invest enough time into the actual culture of a town.
Yeah. And I think what that leads to is a lot of NPCs that you could pick up and easily put any other town.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at some of the cultural things out there, the way people dress, the utensils people use to eat, in our world, there's chopsticks, there's forks, there's, I'm sure there are other things out there.
On Syria, it's your right hand, because your left, you wipe your butt with. Keep going.
But yeah, you could have your character sit down to have a dinner and not recognize anything that's in front of them. Not the food, not the utensils, nothing. That, mm-hmm. to me, would be an interesting piece of culture. Having them basically, they ask, well, what's this in front of me? Well, it looks kind of like this, but you've never seen it.
We're kind of talking about this, and I'm sitting here as a player or as a commentator. I'm like, yeah, definitely add more culture. Talk about the utensils and talk about the patterns on the bowl and talk about Febtober festivals and really put that stuff and spice up your game. And then I'm sitting here as a GM going, good freaking Lord. I got to get into the minutia of f***ing forks.
You
really?
You might actually have to take a note, Chad.
A note? Nothing. I mean, it's just like, how deep in the weeds do you have to get? And I think that you can do these cultural things, but you kind of want to do them in broad strokes or take a lazy GM angle to it. Offload that work onto the players before the game or after the game or during the game. It's just like, look at your player and say, okay, Pat, you go into this town and your wizard was born in this area and he hasn't been here in 20 years. There's a festival going on. Tell me about this festival.
Mm.
Or there's two people who are getting married. Tell us about this marriage ceremony. It's not a white dress and black tuxedo. We're in the Middle Ages. Tell us about what this rite is and this religion and that sort of thing. And I think that it is perfectly acceptable. And see, Pat's getting that look on his face. He's actually thinking about this.
No, I'm trying to remember what the term from Braveheart was, what the rite that they took.
Hand fasting?
No. It was the rite of the liege of the area took the right to have the first night with the wife. Prima nocta or something like that. But anyway.
they did the first rite to rape the shit out of their peasants.
Yes.
But
breathe them out. It was an actual thing too. Yeah. It's not a made up thing.
Being a woman in the Middle Ages was noblemen's so great.
Noblemen were anything but. Most of the time.
Well, so I think if you spend some time doing some of this, though, you can make more interesting NPCs. I mean, I look back at some of the books I've read. I'm a big Isaac Asimov fan. Some of the big things he gets into with the different cultures are the spacers, which are basically people that aren't on Earth. They're colonists. They've wiped out disease. So when they're around somebody from Earth, they won't get within 20 feet of them because the Earth man has potential diseases that they don't have the bacteria to deal with. The same thing. Some of their cultures, they don't actually spend time in the same rooms with each other. Things like that are interesting things that could come off as odd personality quirks that your characters could come to realize that's not a personality quirk of the NPC. They're staying 20 feet away from you because that's their culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just what they do. They don't believe in public displays of affection. So you have two characters, they're holding hands. Ooh, they're shamed. And things like that, I think, could really make your NPCs pop, especially if that NPC is outside of their own region.
And I think that if you add those little minor details like that to your game and the players don't notice it, that's okay. Because you're adding a certain element of life and the real to your game.
If they notice all of it, then you're probably being too obvious.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like you want this to be to where they don't notice it necessarily if it's in there, unless it's a big thing like a Febtober festival or a wedding or something like that.
Yeah, if it's a cultural landmine where they just said something and now this person's offended and they don't understand why, that they're going
to
get.
But you want it to be where if you suddenly stop doing it, they will notice, you know, they'll notice its absence.
Well, and if nothing else, I think as a GM, it would make the world feel more real to me. If I had in my mind all of these things happening, even if I don't describe everything, if I'm thinking about the things that are happening in the town as something that's different that happened in the first town, that makes the town more real to me. So when they ask a question, I won't even think about it. I'll just say something that I wouldn't have necessarily planned to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know from some games I've played that aren't like Pathfinder, like in Exalted, there are actual descriptions of cultural differences in the books. So you will know what's actually going on. And there's big differences. It's not just like you said, where one section is this, one section is this. It is in this town, there are this type of thing, these types of things going on and stuff like that. One of the towns we were in, it's known in Exalted, basically there's a god for everything. And you happen to be one of the higher gods of everything, you know? And so they celebrate every day. They celebrate a god in this one town. And so you can show up and it's just random god day, you know? And it's neat because knowing that about that town, you go in, it's just a party fest, you know, it's just a party town, you know, and it's the cultural. So I think that what you could do as a GM is possibly pre-do this and have the literature somewhere for somebody else to read. I think that adding it into the game as detailed as you're talking about, Wayne, would get a little daunting on the players. But if you have it somewhere where they can just glance at it in a moment when they're not 100% involved in the game or something, is a great idea, because I find it very helpful in Exalted when I can just pull up Wikipedia or something like that and read a little bit about it.
Well, and I think some of the pitfalls you can get into as well is that if you spend too much time gathering this up, everyone from that region then becomes the same. You have to remember people are people. Even if you have this culture, it doesn't mean everyone in that culture is going to be like that, even down to the level of the country itself. Look at the U.S., for example. It is very different here than it is in New York. You know, you could meet two people that are nothing like each other, but you could also meet someone in New York that's just like someone here. It's still possible because it's people are individuals, but regions are different.
That makes sense. I think what ends up happening, I should say, is that when you point out something different between two people in your game, you're basically saying that's an NPC in a lot of players' minds. Does that make sense? Like, if you're differentiating a way somebody's acting, do you know?
I see what you're going for. Yeah.
A player will automatically assume that that person's going to be important eventually.
It's kind of like they become walking Chekhov guns.
Right.
Everybody is background until they do something.
Right.
And to me, I like having characters that don't have anything to do with the plot or the story that people are interacting with. And so I would hope that my regular players, when I run a game, understand that. There's that expectation. Or at least I'll make them used to it very quickly.
Yeah. Any minor NPC that means nothing can suddenly become the most important thing in the story if the players latch onto it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. I guess what I would be worried about as far as differentiating people, like I was saying, is that they'll latch onto a character and take it off in a way different direction than what you've had written, which could be good for somebody like Chad who doesn't have notes. But like, if you have a set idea on how you're going to do something and the players are like, oh, this tavern guy that you said is like not celebrating because he thinks it's whatever, that guy. And then you're like, well, I don't have anything written for him other than me telling you that he doesn't like the celebration that's going on. You know, like,
I can only imagine how hard this would be in one of Chad's games because he's not really doing a lot of notes, you know, nothing coming in. And occasionally he'll take notes. He says he doesn't do notes, but I've seen him take notes on things that we're doing at the time.
I take notes as the game's running.
Exactly.
You don't pre-take notes, is what you mean.
Yeah. It could get really difficult if he's dealing with all of these different cultures and defines things. And the players remember it better than he does.
Yeah.
And then the next game, they're expecting something he doesn't remember to add in.
See, I don't really have that problem, though. My problem I run into is with...
Your players have that problem. No,
it's the minutiae. Things like names or, you know, was this shop on the north side of town or was it on the south side of town? Did this person always wear a red dress or did they always wear a blue dress? And it's the minutiae that I always forget. And you know what? I bet other people do too, because a lot of people don't write that down their notes anyway. But there's a lot of cultural stuff in my games that you guys might not immediately notice, because I really am big into world building and creating this whole world and like thinking about why does this work? Okay, we've made this world where X, Y, and Z is true. You know, we've got these kind of lords and they're vampire lords and they feed off their populace, but they understand that they can't wipe everybody out. They still need people and they have to strike this balance so that people don't overthrow them, but they still are really evil. And so I think about how do they trade? How do they farm? They've created these spells to make it night all the time. And so it's only like daylight 3 hours a day because all this evil magic. How do they live?
See,
how do they trade? You know, what is life like there? And I'm always thinking about this.
For me, a lot of the things that we're talking about here, like just what you just mentioned, is the kind of thing that it's like, that's where you almost need like a source book for your world, be it your own world that you've made or it's an established one. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. A lot of this cultural things, I mean, if you're playing Greyhawk or Forgotten Realms, you go buy the damn books and you read through them and it tells you the cultures and everything like that. Mm. And you're like, oh, but that's not what we're talking about. But really it is.
Well, there's a lot of,
because like what you're just saying is what you need to do as the GM or anything, you want, you're creating a world. You want to write this stuff down. You should have 20 or 30 pages worth of stuff. If this is for a longstanding campaign and you're building a world, this is the kind of things that you want to write down. And it's really, it's supplemental material, because I think it's hard to just cram it down the player's throats in the game session. Because it's really, it's a long game of, if you really want to learn everything about the culture, a lot of it's subtle, like you're saying. Yeah, and it's not, unless you're going to have, you know, your NPCs going just an expositional rampage of saying, this is exactly what the culture is. And these are all the details of it and everything like that. It's just, it's going to take a while to come out.
So. Well, a lot of times I don't even need the players to know that. And I know sometimes you're like this too, Chad. Yeah. I know that. I need it to be internally consistent myself for how I'm playing them.
That's the important thing, is to keep.
And that's why I have to think about these things. But the players don't necessarily need everything.
Well, they don't. But they don't necessarily need it. But like a player like me, I would want it. I want to know these things too. But I'm an engineer. That make you know for me, that's like that is kind of a scientific minded way of thinking. Mm-hmm. So, but other people that maybe they don't really care.
Yeah, and I like to think of it from the perspective of, especially when we collaboratively make a world together, and I have a part in that, and I like to think about through the week, you know, what's this world like? What's the culture like? How do they do this? How do they do that? Why does this work like this? And that's all cool. I like to have an understanding of how the world works. Mm-hmm. It's like what you're talking about, that engineering mindset of like, okay, this has to be a consistent system. Okay, yeah, sure. We have wizards flying on unicorns fighting UFOs. Great, but how does that work? Why is that a thing?
Could somebody make that game? Because it'd be awesome.
Yes.
Awesomely horrible. As long as I can understand it, and then I present that as not an expositional blah, this is what it's like. I present it as, you know, things happen in the game, or you encounter something and they act like this. And you're like, why do they act like that? That doesn't make any sense. But to me, it does, because I have this understanding. And then I could tell you, it's like, well, as your character knows, it's Febtober and they have to get the Febs in for the Toberfest. And,
Well, and some of that comes down to, does your character know or not?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
If your character's been from that region, you can expect your character to know some of that.
Mm-hmm.
If your character roll knowledge nature,
Your character has never been there
enter
before,
the bard.
Yeah, if your character's never been there before, knows nothing about the culture, then it's reasonable to say your character doesn't know. Maybe your character should ask that NPC.
Right, right, and that's how I like to present it, because then that stops two things: stops the expositional vomit on all the players, because I've played in games like that before, where the game master has his thing and he's just like. Blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, I can't absorb this. It allows the game master to say, well, here's this a little bit. Well, here's this a little bit. And if there's an inconsistency in it, then someone like Wayne could say, Chad, well, that's not that. And you're like, because he sounds just like that when he said it too.
He does, actually.
Yes. I never call you on it.
No, you don't. You're very nice.
I catch you on it frequently.
I'm always on your list. You have a list going that I know, and that's actually worse. I wish you would call me on it.
That's true.
Because if I give it to you in little bites like that, it's not the whole system collapses when Wayne comes in. It's the little part is inconsistent, and you can backtrack and repair the part.
Now,
yes, you're right. They do this during the wedding ceremony. Yeah,
now, my GM for Exalted kind of does both this, both like we have the source book that has all the cultural information in it, but he will subtly remind you as you're entering a town or as something's happening. He expects you to read the material because you're getting ready to go into this town, and he lets you know ahead of time. So he will do certain things and you'll miss storyline. If you don't pick up on small things, you know.
I do that to these guys too, where these guys have walked past total storyline stuff because it's something cultural
right.
that they didn't get. And that's fine because they'll pick it up later.
Yeah.
You know, and I can kind of move that around. I use the veil of the GM screen of you don't know what you've just missed. So
and sometimes he'll turn it into rewards. Like we had talked about one of the lesser gods being this thing that they're getting ready to celebrate. And if you had read, you would know that this particular god was the god of collecting things. And when he was talking about when we walked into the city. Rats. Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. More shiny things, I guess. But like when you would walk into the city, he was describing how these crows were going around taking stuff out of people's pockets. And then, or people were leaving stuff on this big, giant, huge thing. There was like gold pieces and all kinds of stuff. And if you were to have picked up on that and said something, you would get extra whatever, dice or whatever he decided that day.
Cake?
Cake.
Would he give you extra Hello. Cake? I'm suddenly reading the whole thing.
No.
XP cake.
Kirk cake.
Kirk cake.
Oh my, that sounds
Kirk is naughty. A beefcake, so.
So one other cultural thing that I have seen this one done well and I've seen it done poorly, architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because different regions have different architecture, and a lot of times the architecture is based around some purpose. You know, this area has heavy volcanic activity. This area has heavy earthquakes. You build to certain standards based on earthquakes. And I think that's something you can kind of play with as well. You know, you can define in the architecture things about the city
mm-hmm.
that are subtle hints to what's going on. This city has statues everywhere of Chad.
Oh, yeah.
That tells you something about that city.
The people
that tells you everyone in that city should be pulled out and beaten.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I could see culture being, it is incredibly important, but I think that too much of it all at once, like you said, Chad, it would be daunting and it'd be really tough for a player.
And I think when it's either too much or getting way too deep in the weeds, it's going to be, the players aren't going to care. As GM, you have a finite amount of resources, either mental bandwidth, or time, or space on a paper, or ink in your pen, whatever, to commit to a game. And adding cultural details will take a chunk of that resources that you have, those personal resources. And it's great. You have to add culture in because it really deepens the game and it makes it interesting, makes it live, makes it breathing.
And it depends on the kind of game.
And it depends on the type of game and the players and that sort of thing, of all that. But you can definitely get way too deep. It's just like NPCs. Yeah, you can have the most detailed, fleshed out, awesome NPC in the world where he's all stat out and you have his entire family tree and you have all this stuff and you have like 300-page novel written on him. But it's game time and you've only written one NPC. Yeah. There's one guy in the whole town and everyone else's cardboard cutout because you didn't think about it.
And then we as the players, we just like totally bypass
it. Yeah,
we
don't like him. Yeah, we don't care about that guy.
Hey,
yeah.
I've got the plot.
Yeah, we care about the grumpy guy in the corner who's not celebrating.
Yeah. Right.
Feb-tober. Feb-tober. What the? Why would you forget Feb-tober?
That's
the mother... I'm going to be concentrating on too.
Yeah,
that's like little Sally with the physics book in the
Men in Black. Yep.
Yeah, totally.
So Dan gave the advice before we started recording of when you're looking at adding something like this, he suggests starting with your
own
culture.
Dan gave the advice of let me out of the trunk,
and we ignored it.
We ignored it.
But he also said start with your own culture first, and think about what do you get annoyed with that people get wrong about your culture.
Yeah. St. Louis is the murder capital of the world, and it's crime, 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 and there's only three people who live in the entire city. That pisses me off when people talk about St. Louis like that.
We can't be as bad as Detroit.
I know, right?
I mean, come on.
I think it's the percentage population.
Yeah, it's percentage population. And
it's because they include St. Louis County.
Yeah, and we're a collection of 3,000 little cities instead of one metropolitan area.
But if you start thinking about things like that that annoy you, that kind of gets your mind going about how do I not do this to other cultures if I'm introducing a culture that really exists? Yeah. So let's say you're in a modern world and you want to take them over to France.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to do that.
Yeah, you don't go to France.
So instead of going to France, you decide you're going to go to...
No, you know what? Like I said, you can go to rural France, just don't go to Paris.
I really hate the French.
I know I hate Parisians.
In fairness, he's actually been there, so he can say that.
At least he can say that, yeah.
That's right. I could be blindly ignorant and say it, but he's been there, and he knows. But yeah, if you think about that, that might actually help.
What have the French ever done for us besides our entire freedom from the British?
And they gave us an awesome statue.
They did give us an awesome statue.
How would we have stopped Vigo in Ghostbusters 2
without the
Statue
French.
Of Liberty?
But they gave one to the Japanese, too. It's just smaller.
Of course it's small, because we're Americans.
We're Americans. Japanese are shorter.
Anyway, sorry. picking up on the things you hate too.
Exactly. So racism in culture.
We came full circle.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Julie. What were you saying?
I don't even remember.
Exactly.
You were going to give actual content. That's where you went wrong.
I shouldn't talk about that.
She went off the rails there. Right. Off the reservation. Shame on you.
I know. I'm sorry.
Why don't you talk about how Japanese people are short again?
I didn't say that. That was him.
Well, we know he's a racist.
Yeah.
Hey, she's been to Japan. She could tell us that they're all
true. She could be a racist.
Yeah, I went there and had a horrible time finding shoes because apparently I have gargantuan American feet. And so Mike, my fiance, is going to school for Japanese. So he got to learn how to ask every shoe store what the biggest size to carry was.
Mutant American women
feet. And then he had to figure, when they said such and such size, he had to be like, well, give me the one that runs the biggest. Because, you know, sometimes shoes will fit differently.
Mm. And I think he was asking for them for himself?
No.
Yes.
No.
Maybe a little.
Yeah. Being in Japan, it is, you know, speaking of finding things that are annoying, having been to Japan and then going to the Japanese festival is frustrating.
Oh, I bet.
Because the Japanese festival is nothing like Japan. And I actually was just having a discussion about this because Gwen Stefani was all into like the Harajuku thing a while ago. The best part about that is by the time it was popular here, it was no longer popular in Japan. So I didn't know this. Well, I didn't think about it, I guess. And so I went to Harajuku to see this type of dress. None.
It's gone.
And so people just, it's really funny how easily you come to conclusions when you go to your local Japanese festival. So obviously people run around and cosplay and do all this stuff. Yeah. And it's really not true. They do it on Sundays. Mm-hmm. That's our cosplay day.
See, that's the problem. You should just forget about going to anything cultural and go to Akihabara instead.
I did go to Akihabara, though.
That's all you need.
We went to everywhere in Tokyo. But I think that...
Pat, that's the porn area.
Oh, yeah. That's where I'd be.
Yeah. I never leave. I saw a sign that said men's, spelt with a Z, holes. What that means, I think I know, but I did not try to find out.
Huh.
Japanese are up, man. It's all tentacle porn.
Cultural sensitivity. Fear the boot.
Yeah, that's right.
Three of us went to the Japanese festival. One thinks that it's all tentacle porn. They have a lot of other kinds of porn.
Yes.
That's right. You can't pigeonhole them in the porn.
Yeah, it's all pixelated. I don't want to watch that shit.
Do you really want me to get into this?
Yeah.
On okay. Kicked in the Dice Bag.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think that's where we're going to wrap this one up. So, again, I hope we have
offended every culture out there.
I hope that we've offended everyone in every culture equally. Because we want to be equal.
Yeah.
If we haven't offended you, let us know so we can offend you.
I don't want to make sure
there's equal opportunity.
I don't want to be accused of being culturalist. So, but anyway, I hope we have some good information here for, you know, if you're trying to add some culture to your game. Mm-hmm. I hope you're not, because I like base culturalist games, but that's just me. So have some good games, and we'll talk to you next time.
And remember to catch the Fear the Boot crew at the Febtober celebrations in St. Louis.
Febtober.
We're just going to make that now.
Febtober. That's how you said it, too. Febtober.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.